Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go. It's a Dog Talk podcast hosted by a friend, a mentor, and a brother, Dr. Greg Roscoe out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's running a little behind right now, probably doing a little surgery, but yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles, will play a little host taking his place, sitting in that warm chair till he gets back in. 347-205-9631 if you happen to miss it. 60 minutes goes by quick, depending if we're going 30 or 60 today. If you happen to miss it, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to the podcast, powered now by Mancini Media. So as I lay the red carpet down, put that podium in its place, hand off the mic, the special guest today, and boy, he is a legend in Pittsburgh, Claudio Rosato. Claudio, first of all, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And boy, there's a lot to talk about till we get Doc in here.
Yeah, hello, Mark. Good to talk to you. Yes, you can go to my website, ClaudioRosano.com. Even if you spell it wrong, somehow or another, it comes up to my name. So that, and we've got some shows, but the Boxing Authorities show, you can connect with us on that net, on that website as well, ItalianImpactWeekly.com. I do a show with Steve Mancini called Italian Impact Weekly, and just started a new show called Real Boxing Talk with John Parato, which you can check out on my website, again, ClaudioRosano.com, as well as CRSMmedia.com, and we're getting picked up by some other platforms, so I'm excited about that. So everything's good. Everything's good.
Yeah, you know, and that's, it's nice to know. You know, when you look at boxing – and, you know, I know this is a doc show and we could talk about head injuries and everything, but we saw horse racing kind of go off a cliff. We all grew up with boxing, the Muhammad Ali's, the Sugar Ray Leonard's, and that's kind of slipped a little now. And then we got football with the head injuries and everything and the kickoff changes this past couple days. Is football going the same way as is boxing and horse racing, and can we get those other two sports back? Because I don't know if soccer mom is kind of saying, well, maybe I don't want my son to do something like that. Maybe I want a safer sport so he can make a little bit more money, or vice versa. What is going on with the world of these sports with the head injuries?
Well, as far as boxing is concerned, you know, everybody thinks that MMA has taken over, and they have certainly done well. But boxing, every event that you see on TV, every event that I've attended, every of all the pay-per-views, all of them, and I mean just the 95% plus, are sellouts or high pay-per-view purchases. So boxing is not doing bad at all. Now you may not have the personalities such as or that, for example, in the 80s when you had Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Tommy Hearns, Marvin Hagler, Ray Boom Boom Mancini. Then in the 90s, you know, the Tysons, Lennox Lewis, Vinnie Pazienza, or again in the 80s, Donnie LaLonde, and so on and so forth. So you had a lot of big personalities back then. Now, in my opinion, you don't have the big personalities. And again, the Oscar De La Hoyas, Evander Holyfield, Riddick Bowe, I can go on and on. But boxing attendance-wise is doing fantastic. As far as football and maybe the lack of roster spots. Yeah, you know, the head injuries have certainly garnered a lot of attention, and rightly so. So it may not be – it's still the sport to watch, I know. But as far as participating, I don't have any, you know, numbers to give you. But, you know, flag football is picked up and things like that. So if flag football is picked up, that means the tackle football, those – kids used to play tackle football, now they're not. So I'm guessing that the rosters have gotten a little smaller.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, when you look at it in general, because the head injury, here comes the doc right now.
I'm here.
Yay, Doc, we're talking about head injuries with Claudio as I fell down the fort. I'll turn it over to you, and we're discussing football injuries, kickoff returns, and everything else like that. I will man the boards as you got a busy board, and I'll see you at the top of the hour.
Wow, hey, sorry I had a few minutes late. But, Claudio, good evening.
Dr. Roscoe, how are you, sir?
Very well. Thank you for joining us this evening. And, you know,
anything for you.
As we, yes, what a treat. What a pleasure. And, you know, we have been looking at certain injuries athletically, you know, through the different seasons, Claudio. And, you know, we had talked with Dr. Matt Barrichello, who repairs a lot of these injuries as well. We had started to get some information and questioning that, Claudio, in the major leagues, there was some talk about the turf that the major leaguers play on. And one of my listeners had sent over some articles talking about down in St. Petersburg, Florida, at the Tropicana Field, that they're using coconut husks as well as walnut shells in the turfing to help take away some of the difficult athletic problems. Have you heard anything like that, Claudio?
You know, I've heard of that, and also you'll hear, and I've seen, I haven't played on one of those fields yet, but I have coached, I have coached on the fields with the black rubber, you know, the tires that get mulched up, and they're put in the turf. The only problem with the black rubber pebbles, whatever you want to call them, specks,
sure,
dots, whatever, they get in your eye, and then you have an issue. Like football anyway, even baseball, when the ball gets hit, you'll see a lot of that black pop up, right? It gets in your shoe. It's a pain. So it's like there's side effects to those things. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Doc.
No, I was just saying with regard to the whole fabrication of that as opposed to dirt and grass, you're right, problems have arisen even though you don't have the mud. You don't have the holes, correct, that you might have on a grass field.
Correct. And, for example, you know, Joe Namath is one of my favorite players. If you look at most of his games, especially at his home field at Shea Stadium, you know, he was like he was on ice. And, you know, that's not good. He had bad knees, obviously. And also, obviously it affects the play and the throws and this, that, and other thing. But as far as health is concerned, you know, it's like somebody with sneakers, tennis shoes, walking on ice, and you're going to pull something, you're going to snap something. Now, years ago, the complaint was the turf, like Three River Stadium and Veterans Stadium all the baseball stadiums, they used to call them cookie cutters, which I happen to love Three River Stadium, but that ground was hard. Now, you were able to make cuts as a football player, as a baseball player. You could make a good jump on a ball, and the ball didn't take bad hops. So game, and also you got more hits because the field was faster. But injury-wise, you know, people like Dave Parker and some other people used to say that turf was hell on the knees.
Wow.
I don't know what the answer is. Years ago, I don't know if you remember, but in the early 80s, they started something in basketball called tartan turf, which was rubber. And I remember CCAC North, the one in the north side, they were one of the first ones to have it. NC State, Jim Valvano, athletic director at NC State, also head coach, basketball coach, they had it. Now, you could jump a little higher, there was a little more spring. I don't remember what the problem was with the rubber. Maybe when you would stop, you know, your knee might pop, you know. So so that went away quick. Maybe even a lot of your listeners won't remember the tartan turf, but they were trying to get rid of the court. And so there's always going to be some sort of injury. I guess you're looking for the turf that's going to give you the least amount
of injury.
Right, exactly.
Well, Claudio, you know, with regard to your experience, and you've seen a lot, are there standards for flooring in basketball? What a basketball, say, court can have or cannot have, you know, with regard to hardness? Are there standards for that?
I don't believe so. Once they got, I don't think there's any more tartan turf basketball courts. Again, that was in the early 80s, and I think that's gone. As far as the hardness of a basketball court, I mean, wood is wood. You know,
yes.
I think there's different textures, there's different looks. You know, I remember the Boston Celtics had a little bit of a darker wood than maybe some others, but as far as the surface, and I think wood is wood.
Yes.
Baseball field wise, I mean, there somebody's always coming along, like you said, the one at Tropicana Field. Somebody's always trying to come up with something to, you know, build a better mousetrap. And
yeah,
whenever you're doing that, you also have to make sure, again, like the tartan turf, I believe the problem with that was when you stopped, it was like hitting the brakes hard, you know. And
wow.
Apparently that was not good.
Sure.
A lot of the turf anymore, all the turf that I've coached on, I just got back from Florida, they all
yes.
had the black rubber chips, or whatever you want to call it. And again, I don't think there was a problem with the knees with that, to be honest with you. I don't think as a coach there's no problem, but as a player I haven't heard any complaints. Just when, you know, yes, the uncomfortable part of it with that stuff getting in your shoe, that's nothing. But when
yeah.
it gets into your eye, that's you know, if you dive for a ball or when you slide or in football you get tackled,
yeah.
that could be an issue.
And, you know, Claudio, with regard just to that one concept, I know this information this listener has sent me, they talked about the field junction with the warning track, so to speak, having mm-hmm. a different consistency so
yeah.
that the outfielder running for a ball doesn't have to go ahead rely on peripheral vision, but they rely on that change in footing. Is that something you've heard about too?
Oh, of course. I mean, that goes all the way back. I mean, again, like Three Rivers, you had the turf, then you had the orange, I just say it was like a very fine rock that they chipped up. This way, whenever you left the turf and your feet did what it said it was, warning track, it
sure.
warned you close to the fence. So, yeah, that's what they did. And I'm guessing that's still – you can kind of almost use any kind of material there, but most likely they still use that orange chipped, very fine chipped
sure.
rock. So you know that you're leaving grass, turf, and you're on to that.
You know, I thought that was very, very good discussion. You know, where I got these articles, they were talking about that down in Tropicana Field, that when they removed that existing – turfing, and I'm not sure what it was, Claudio, and they donated that to high schools and little leaguers while they put this new turfing in Tropicana Field.
Mm-hmm.
They got some kind of a tax credit in this transition as well with this donation. So I thought that was kind of cute. You know, the darndest things happen to us, and technology. I think you used the words a better mousetrap. And I think we're all looking for a better mousetrap. And you've seen an awful lot. You've done an awful lot. And, you know, the purpose of this changing was to prolong an athlete's career, you know, where they don't get as many knee injuries or ankle injuries. Would you be thinking along the same line of that, Claudio?
Well, you know, in football, they always talk about these preventative things to prevent injuries, but yet they'll add two more games. So let's not be hypocritical. At least the NFL, they want to make money. And yes, they'll make the helmets a little bit thicker or whatever. So that's all fine, but then you add two more games. So I think that's being hypocritical. Baseball, you know, it's all about the buck. Baseball,
sure.
I don't know how many safety precautions they've taken. Maybe that, you know, they've talked about, I haven't even noticed it, to be honest with you, but the first base bag, like being double in size, or I guess somebody gets spiked. Okay, that, I'm fine with that. But they, and I know you can't crash in to the catcher. That was an old, you know, thing. Obviously, sure. Pete Rose, Ray Fosse thing, and Johnny Bench, they did a documentary of him a few years ago, and they showed how many times he got plowed over, you know, because you're basically defensive. You're waiting for the ball to come.
Oh, yeah.
That runner's coming in. But, you know, the main injury when you think baseball, you think pitchers and their arms. And I did a show the other day, and you know, they talk about there's more arm injuries now than there were in this, you know, 70s, 80s, and they'll say,
sure.
Well, because these guys are throwing so much harder. But the thing is, I think, number one, there's several reasons. They're throwing harder, but they're throwing less, okay? When I was growing up, and even I'm sure you too, Doctor, look at the complete games. I'll put it to you this way. A second-tier pitcher in the 70s and 80s would have 15 complete games. There's not 15. I don't think there's 15 complete games in the entire major leagues. If there is, it's maybe like 17. So one second-tier pitcher had more than an entire league. So they're pitching much, much less. But so why are there so many injuries? I think technique, where they're not, you know, Tom Seaver threw just as hard as anybody. Nolan Ryan threw harder than anybody. Why didn't they get hurt? Legs, they used their legs. Dave Stewart, they used proper mechanics. They just didn't use their arm. And then people will, again, they'll say, well, these guys say throw harder. But those guys back then, they threw hard, but they also threw more pitches, and they threw many more breaking pitches, which is a lot of torque, twisting, violence on
yes.
that arm. Okay? So I don't think that's a good excuse. And I think another thing, Babe Ruth used to joke, he said, I never had a pulled muscle because I never had a muscle to pull. These guys today they all look like bodybuilders.
Sure.
And or maybe not bodybuilders as they did in the 90s, but they're pretty big, thick guys.
Sure.
And they're always in the weight room. And when you have muscles like that, you're going to pull more muscle. So that's,
boy.
In my opinion, that's what's going on.
Wow. Well, you know, you talk about, you know, technique of pitching and, you know, how people are trained and how – one would be trying to improve the quality of their body. Well, you know, who's making these decisions, Claudio? You know, who's teaching young athletes on the way up how to become stronger and better, preserve their health? Is that the coaching? Is that the trainers? Where does that come from? You know, of course, as you know, we talked about – yeah, go ahead.
No, I think the problem, again, the Italians have a saying, the fish stinks from the head. And what that means is if you're a bad parent, it trickles down. If you're a bad CEO, it trickles down. On the professional level, be it trainers or whoever, you know, I'm not trying to blame a specific group. I'm just saying whoever it is, they say, well, weightlifting is good and this is good and all these guys. And then the colleges do it. Then if the colleges do it, then the high schools are going to do it. And,
sure.
and it trickles down. Now, whoever makes that decision, I said trainers. Maybe it's who knows who it is. But whoever it is, somebody's saying to do it. And then, for example, you know, people ask me, and again, these are just my opinions. So people say, well, what is your pitching program? Okay, so they want you to say, okay, I have – my, you know, eight pitchers, they'll throw 60 pitches this week and 70 pitches next week and all of that. I don't do that. What I do is this, and it does come to trust. There was a kid, young man I had at CMU. His name was John Collins. He'd come in. He'd say, Coach, this is before the season would start, or even during the season, I can only throw maybe about 15 pitches today in the bullpen. Okay.
Why?
Next week. He said, Coach, I think I could throw 25. Okay. Then he'd throw 120 in a game, complete game, do great, and didn't even have an arm injury. So my point is, why should I have player 1, 2, and 3 all throw 40 pitches today, 75 pitches the next time, 85 pitches the next time, when let's say player one can throw 40 today, player two can only throw 20, and then player three can throw 60. Well, then do what you can do. Everybody's different. Everybody's
sure.
arm's different. Everybody gets in shape differently. Do what you have to do to get in shape. For me to say everybody has to do this, it's not good.
Got it.
I am a huge, huge advocate in stretching, stretching, stretching. And the other thing, again, back when I saw, I used to go to the Pirate games early, and like 10, well, my uncle used to work up there, so I used to see these guys working out. They would do something called long toss. They would go from foul pole to foul pole and throw line drives to each other. And what that did was it strengthened the arm and also stretched out your arm. And then if you pitched, then the next day you did a light workout. You did a light toss. This way your arm didn't get restricted and tight. Nowadays, I don't know what they do, but there's more injuries. So I think
sure.
sometimes, you know the old saying, Dr. Roscoe, go back to basics. Well, I always say, why leave them? You know,
well, that's beautiful.
Everybody wants to improve or improve a certain methodology
sure.
or a certain technique. But everybody wants – a lot of people want to get cute when, in fact, again, back when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, they ran like crazy. They stretched like crazy, did a little lifting. It was a swear word back then, lifting weights, especially for pitchers, and long toss. And then another thing that they did that was these guys were huge on it. You can watch the 70 World Series, 71 World. If the pitcher, Bruce Keeson from the Pittsburgh Pirates, I'm just using him for an example. He got
surely.
On base against Baltimore in the 71 World Series. He had a jacket on. If you were a pitcher and you got on base, you wore a jacket. If you were a pitcher and you were on the bench waiting for your turn to go back out and pitch, you wore a jacket to keep your arm warm. You don't see that anymore. You do not see a pitcher. I don't know if you see him wearing a jacket in the dugout or not. I haven't noticed it. But if he's on, they don't run the bases anymore. But obviously they don't hit. But you don't see that. So, you know, as with everything, there's always a combination of reasons why there are
sure.
the injuries that there are.
Well, you know what? You bring up a very good point. You know, especially with football, I can remember Tom Brady playing, and when he would be off, you know, he would do the offensive series of plays that beat defense, he had a jacket on. He had that arm covered. I can remember some very specific games, especially up north, that he was covered up, so to speak. So I think your
yeah.
point is well taken. You know, that brings me to the point, though, Claudio, with regard to, say, a goal. You know, we talk about philosophy, goals, anywhere. But with a major league franchise, you know, are they looking at talent from the standpoint of short-term talent for this season? Are they building a team for, you know, a 3 or 4 or 5 year run in a pennant? You know, is there thinking along those lines? You know, what are we getting this pitcher for, this player for? You know, what do I need? You know, what do I need him for? Where are we going? You know, what's the philosophy here about trying to win a pennant or a Super Bowl? Are there different philosophies?
I think there's. It depends where the team is. For example, the Steelers, and I'm not a Steeler fan, but even though yeah. I do some shows about them, but I have to say this: they had, in my opinion, a phenomenal off season, and they're a great example. They have a veteran quarterback in Russell Wilson, who probably isn't going to be here next year.
Sure.
But they think they can win with him this year, and they got Justin Fields for the future. So they did a little bit of both. Now, again, growing up, let's just talk about the Pirates. Every year, you know, I was lucky in the 70s and in a little piece of the 80s, you know, they were always in contention, or there was always a shot for them to make not just the playoffs,
sure.
but the World Series. But every year, for example, 79, what did they do? They traded for Bill Madlock. They traded for Tim Foley. You know, they got a guy named Dave Roberts, Joe Coleman. Madlock and Tim Foley were starters. Joe Coleman and Dave Roberts were bit players, but they still had a key role team. So the Pirates did both. They looked for the long term and the short term. Why? Well, Yankees several years ago, they were in World Series contention, and they got Jose Canseco because they didn't want another team to get him. They were in a position to do something like that. So now, if you're a team like the Pirates now, you know, they've been saying it every year, we're looking towards the future. So they sign this player for X amount of years, and they draft their the number one pick schemes, you know. They're looking long-term. And then they get, they get that Chapman, the reliever, left-hand reliever. You know, he's up in years. I don't know how many years they're going to keep him, or maybe they find him to trade him once they're out of the playoff race. Some other team that's in the playoff race might need a lefty reliever. The Pirates can trade him and hopefully get something back. So my long answer to that short answer is it depends where they're at. You know, are they looking – I'll give you another example. If you're in the landscaping business, which I have a landscape business, let's say you say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to retire from this business in about 2 years. You're probably not going to invest, you know, $85,000 in equipment, okay? But if you're just – you're 24 years old and you think that, hey, I'm going to I'm going to have a long-term landscape business, well, you're going to go out and get the $15,000 walk-behind, the $85,000 truck, the six-meter. So it depends where you're at.
I see that. And
the good
organizations,
they know, again, the Pirates of the 70s, you know, you hear Baltimore and the Dodgers, they had great organizations without question. But the Pirates, if you look at the players that they had, and I knew some of the front office people, Joel Brown, Harding Peterson, Joe O'Toole, who was the vice president, loved Mr. O'Toole. He was always great with me as a little kid and older. Those guys knew the game, and they knew when to plug in a player, when to trade this one for that player, who to draft. I mean, the players of the 70s that they brought in, wow. And but they also, though, they would get their – they would definitely – have their young players, but like, for example, the 71 Pirates, they would add a Vic Davalio, a veteran, a Nelly Bryles, a veteran, a Dave Justy, a veteran, mixed in with homegrown players like a Clemente, a Stargell, a Sanguian, a Kleins, an Alley, a Mazeroski, a Hebner, a Robertson, an Oliver, guys like that. So they did both. They had their homegrown players, and they'd go out and get some veterans that would take them over the top, and obviously it worked for the 71 team and all teams. It works for all teams.
Sure. And, you know, you mentioned about that mix. They talk about these players, how well they are in going on in the clubhouse, you know, with the young players. You have the old players. Is there a lot to those mechanics of what goes on building a team and teamwork and philosophies? And guys have maybe played in a World Series. Do you want that guy in the clubhouse talking to the young guys?
The right person, yes. Just because there's some players out there in all sports that they're just not winners. They have the numbers, but there's something that they bring to the table that just isn't good. And it's up to the GM, the coach, or whatever. For example, if I see you, Dr. Roscoe, I see you quarter of a second, I know it's Dr. Roscoe. I recognize him. I can spot on my teams or teams that I've studied if they're a special team or not. Example, special teams, and not just because they were dynasties, but they were dynasties because they had special people. The Green Bay Packers of Lombardi, the Knoll years of the Steelers. The 49ers with Walsh and Joe Montana. Those get Ronnie Lott, the defensive back for the 49ers. He was told he needed to operate on his pinky. So he said, sure. Well, if you do, you're going to miss the playoffs. He said, amputate it. So he amputated the tip of his finger. Now, I'm not advising people to do that, but he was a special player.
Sure.
Okay. And by special, it's almost like an it factor. How do you describe it? How do you describe special? Someone who isn't selfish, someone who wants to win. I always say this, if we all pull the same rope at the same time, the same direction, for the same purpose, we're going to have a great result. And that, and also players that want coached, and the veteran players who come into a situation and they see a young group with talent, but they say, this is how you win. Okay, this is how you do it. It's not just, you know, going up to an at bat. It's how you deal with a loss. It's how you deal with a victory. This is what I went through, the good, bad, and the ugly. I'd like to pass it on to you and teach you how to do it. I'll give you another example, and I just said this the other day.
Claudio, let's hold for 1 minute. Mr. Mancini is in the studio, and we have got loads. Would you mind if we would break into the studio, Claudio, and answer a few questions from our listeners?
Of course. I'm sorry I went on too long, but go ahead.
No, thank you. We're doing well. And then what I want to do is in the next half hour, Claudio, I'd like to bring up something called mechanics. How you assess mechanics of baseball players. And then I also want our listeners to know, you know, you're a professional coach. And in that job arena, tell us how you do it. What do you, as a, you know, special scout, you know, look at and what you do? Let's go to Mr. Mancini. Mr. Mancini, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. This is an interesting conversation as we break it across the board and getting involved with injuries and everything. But Joey from Bucks County, PA, I'll take a few and get back to you guys, says, you know, there's a scandal going around baseball right now. I know it doesn't pertain to the doc show, but Shohei Ohtani claiming he knows nothing about what happened. His interpreter took $4.5 million. Doesn't this open the case for Pete Rose to get reinstated back in to the Hall of Fame? Wow, that's an interesting question, guys.
Yeah. Claudio, do you want to pick that one up?
Well, whether I don't know what Ohtani did or didn't do, but the Pete Rose thing, I'll say this. I know a lot of former major leaguers, friends with a lot of former major leaguers, and I don't know one of them who said to not reinstate, but to allow him to be in the Hall of Fame. Now, here's my opinion on it. You know, they were competitors, so maybe that could have added something to it. But for me, it was dumb, stupid, wrong, whatever you want to say. He should not have done it, obviously. And they say, okay, he lied about it, so would everybody else, okay. I don't believe you let him back in the game at any even he's 82 now, but never let him back in any decision-making part of the game. No, you can't. But because it would be too much speculation if he did something, oh, wait a minute,
sure,
doesn't look right. Okay. But as far as an ambassador to the game, yes. And also allow him to be voted by the Hall of Fame voters. Because the Hall of Fame is different from Major League Baseball. It's two separate entities, okay? The Hall of Fame should – they could say, we are going to put his name up for ballot. His name was never up for ballot, for vote. And what you're going to have is a Hall of Fame with no all-time hit leader, no all-time home run leader, one of the all-time strikeout leaders, and Clemens, a top five home run hitter, and Alex Rodriguez. I know we don't want to get into the stairway thing just yet, but Pete Rose should be a lot. In my opinion, I'd like to see him get voted into the Hall of Fame. I think it would be great for baseball. I think it would be a celebration of baseball. They love Pete. He's 82. There's people who have done murder who I don't believe have wrong of a price as Pete Rose has. So for selfish reasons, baseball should allow him to get voted in. He'll steal the show. People will it'll be an emotional day for baseball, celebration. And that's what I'd like to see happen. Maybe, you know, hey, everybody deserves a second shot. And then nobody's perfect, including the people who are voting. Okay? So, you know, including the people who are voting, everybody has a glass house. So sure. I'd like to see, for the baseball selfish reasons, allow him to get voted in. It'd be a beautiful moment for baseball, in my opinion.
And, along those lines, Claudio, what kind of records did Pete hold that haven't been broken? I don't know all his history, but, he was somewhat great at many, many things, correct?
Well, he had more hits than anybody in the history of baseball, obviously. But I believe he made more all-star teams at different positions than anybody else. He will tell you that he was involved in more winning games than anybody else. I guarantee you he was in the top 10 in runs scored, if not top 5 in runs scored. He was a winner. But not only that, but it was the way he played. He was, they gave him the name, Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford gave him the name Charlie Hustle as kind of a rib, but his uniform always got dirty. And we're not talking about the hall of the moral, nicest people, the straightest people, the people who never, Dale Murphy was a wonderful, wonderful person. Nobody can say anything about him. Christy Mathison, of course, he's in the Hall of Fame. Everybody loved him. But in all sport, you got to remember something. These people are talented, unbelievably skilled people who had to go through a lot to go from point A to point B, but they're human. Everybody has a vice. Everybody has a mistake. Everybody has a past, including the writers, okay?
Wow.
Let's keep that aside. I know some writers who – some local yokel Hall of Fames won't vote somebody in because they didn't like them or whatever. You have to be grown up enough to say, I don't like this guy as a person, but he deserves being Hall of Fame. Pete made a mistake, put him in. These Hall of Fames are all a little political.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, let me give you one more because that'll give you guys a little bit more time to break down your second topic. But Bob coming in, first-time caller, coming in from Pompano Beach, Florida, says, I think the safest sports to play without the injuries, I could be wrong, would be probably swimming, table tennis, and golf. Great choices for individuals who want physical activity without the concern of getting hurt.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, it depends how bad the golfers are because I know some can hit the ball the other fairway, and if you can't swim and you're a swimmer, you're in trouble. But I think, obviously, I'm joking, but there's less risk in those, obviously. But, people like MMA. Why does it get packed? Because people like to see that violence. Evel Knievel, some people wanted to see him make the jump. Some people wanted to see him not make the jump, just the way it is.
It's your human nature.
Human nature.
Mark, go ahead. What else do you have? Do you have another one?
Hey, Albert from Poway says listening to the show. He loves it. Keep it up. Steve from Corvallis, another avid listener, says, I can't get enough of you, Roscoe. We need more time, buddy. So as I give it back to you, I'll see you guys in about 15 minutes to wrap.
Wow. All right. Thank you very much. I'd like to go on, Claudio. Our time is so short, and you're doing such a great job. I want to talk about two other areas. Fantastic, honestly.
You didn't know I knew so much about turf, did you?
No, I thought it was a very interesting topic, and I thought I could stump you a little bit. But you know a lot about turf. Along with turf and injuries, mechanics. And I mentioned that you are a professional scout. I know you're a coach also. When you're scouting, are you looking at mechanics of players? What are the thoughts in your head? Are you thinking about, I know that the Pirates can use him this season to try to get to a pennant. This guy will take some developing, but I think we're long-term. He's a Hall of Famer. How do you assess this? What are the goals? What's the process you go through? Can you talk about that with us?
Yes, and I'm going to give you two sides of the fence because that's just the way it is. Everybody's different. There was a player several years ago, all-star. His name was Hunter Pence. He did everything that you probably wouldn't teach. He had a hitch. He just did everything. He threw. He wasn't very graceful when he threw, but he was a hell of a player. And you know what you do with him? You leave him alone because he was. It worked for him. It worked for him. Now, I do a lot of, you know, pro trial camps and college showcases, and I see a lot of bad mechanics in the hitting department. You know, we won't go into that too much, but
no,
uppercut, ridiculous, or let the ball travel deeper, hit the lower half of the ball, all ridiculous. Okay, trust me, you hear it all the time. I hit the lower half of the ball to create backspin. Hell, I can't throw the ball to myself and hit a fungo and hit the lower half of the ball, but I'm going to hit a 98 mile an hour pitch, lower half of the ball to create backspin. Get the hell out of here. That is ridiculous. But you'll hear it on MLB Network, or let the ball travel deep. Another stupid thing, unless you're trying to move a hitter or a runner over. But anyway, I'll give you an example. One time I was hired to do an independent camp in New York, White Plains, I believe it was. I get out of my rental car, and about 75 yards, maybe 100 yards away, I go in my trunk, get my bags, and I see this kid fielding a ball. And as soon as I saw him, wow. Because he glided to the ball. He didn't stop.
Okay.
So what I look for on defense is a glider, athleticism. I look for smoothness, okay? I look for his arm angle. Is fluidity. Graceful. I look for that. Something pretty. Okay. Then, of course, we're talking again. As a hitter, I look for someone. I'm very, 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 very good at teaching hitting and very, very, very good at seeing a hole, a weakness in a hitter. If I see him flying open or uppercutting and so on and so forth, I can pick it out in a quarter of a second. He's not going to hit on a higher level. That's what a good scout should know.
Sure.
So you look at mechanics in that sense. You know, so again, on defense, and now if you look for an arm, you look for a ball that when they throw it from the outfield to the respective base, let's say third base, is it accurate, obviously, but is there a little heat at the end of that throw? What kind of, or, you know, does he have a strong arm? Is it an accurate arm? Same with an infielder. For a glove, for a fielder, I'm doing a coach's clinic here in about a week, and I'm going to be teaching some of this stuff. But an infielder, does he receive the ball or does he repel? Okay. My daughter and I, what she was in the Girl Scouts, we won the egg catching contest like 3-4 years in a row because we received the egg. We didn't go out and get it and repel it. Even though there is a coach in the major leagues, I just saw it hit about last year. He was teaching to stab at the ball, which is the first time that I've ever heard a coach talking about stabbing at a ball with your glove. I think that's ridiculous. But he's trying to be a lone wolf, and hopefully it gets traction on his end so people know who the hell he is. I think it's ridiculous. So I do look for that. I look for footwork because if you stomp as an outfielder, you're going to see the ball bounce. You're making the ball harder to catch than it should. Or are you a glider? On the infield, if you glide, you're going to get to the ball quicker and an angle. And how do you receive the ball? And how's your glove hand transition? Bill Mazeroski, they used to call him no touch on the double play because he'd get it, boom, it was gone. He didn't fumble around with the ball. Okay, get it and get rid of it. Dan Marino, the quarterback, they used to say his dad taught him up and out, get the ball up and out. Don't let it sit there. Up and out. As soon as you get Namath, up and out. And so that's what you look for. But again, let me say this, doctor. My dad had a friend who was going to go to Italy. And my dad said, you're going to love the Sistine Chapel. You're going to love all the historical statues. Oh, my God. The guy went over there. He came back. He said, it was okay. So, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Some scouts, I don't know. Everybody's talking about analytics, whatever. I still do look for mechanics. Now, not everybody's a robot. Everybody's not going to have great mechanics, like I mentioned about Hunter Pence. At the end of the day, is he getting the job done? If he's not getting the job done, how can we fix it? So I'm doing something for the company called Draft Nation, and it's a great project that we're almost finished with. a four-hour video that I'm looking at a player through a coach's eyes and I'm making comments. Then I'm going into a studio and I'm going to look at that same player through a scout's eyes. So look at him as a scout.
Yeah.
As a scout, you don't correct. You analyze, you paint a picture for the respective teams. As a coach, that's where you fix.
Wow. And, you know, Claudio, we've had people on talking about pitchers and mechanics and this front leg, lower half. You know, do you look for that in a pitcher?
I look for, you know, if you – when I hit fungos, which is when you get a fungo bat is a long, you know, 36, 37-inch bat, thin, and you use it to hit infield, outfield. Well, apparently, whenever I hit fungos, after I hit it, I spin the bat with my left hand. I spin it. One of my players said, Coach, show me how to do that. I said, do what? You spin it. You know, I couldn't spin it because I was thinking about it. I couldn't spin it. Okay? Now, if you start talking, it sounds great. Yeah, the lower half this, and you bend the knee 3/4 of 60 degrees and all
right.
that. Ah, come on.
Yes.
You know what? Here, I like to make things simple because, like I said in hitting, hit the lower half of the ball to get out of here with that. Let the ball travel deep. Get out of here with that. As a pitcher, Tom Seaver never had arm injuries. Okay, he used his legs tremendously. So I say don't fall towards the catcher, drive towards the catcher. That's all. Use that back leg to drive towards the catcher. Grant Jackson, a very good friend of mine who unfortunately passed, he was a Game 7 winner of the 1979 Pirates World Series. He said something so simple. He said, when you're pitching, he was a pitching coach as well, he said balance is important. Why? Because when you're balanced, you're throwing because you want to. If you're leaning, you're throwing because you have to. And that's where the arm injuries happen. Because you're leaning, the arm drags. You know you got to hurry up and throw the ball. You rush, you pop that arm. You put a lot of stress on that arm, and your legs are gone. It's just like if you and I were lifting something, we are going to, in unison, bend our knees and pick up. You know, you want to use your body. You want to use your body. And I remember John Candelaria, I brought him on to do a camp for us years ago, I think 2007-08 in West Virginia.
Oh, wow.
And he got upset at these kids because they were opening up their hips and stepping towards the baseline when they were pitching. He said, wait a minute, where are you guys learning this at? And, you know, with all sports, somebody tries to come up with something to be different, right? And then it unfortunately kind of gets carried on.
Sure.
So he said, well, that's what we're taught. You know, well, what the hell? The only thing that's going to help is a surgeon because you're going to tear your arm up because you're opening up.
Sure.
Your arm drags, you know. So mechanics is something that you do look for. But, again, having said all that, if somebody – Kent Tekulve. Let me go back to Candelaria. Candelaria was 6'7". You know, 230-some pounds, whatever.
Yes.
But when he was in rookie league in Bradenton, they told him to throw overhand because he would throw harder. And he did. But his ball was straighter, and he was getting hit hard. As he walked off the field, he hollered up to the scouting director. I believe it was Pete Peterson. He said, hey, Pete, either the pitching coach goes or I go. Because John threw 3/4 in sidearm. Okay?
Sure.
John threw 3/4 in sidearm. His mechanics were his mechanics, and it worked for him. So, again, it's like a doctor. You're a doctor. If I come in there, you don't start giving me pills or say, let's go surgery. No. What do? You give me a physical. You find out more about
me. Oh, yeah.
Then you give me a diagnosis. Then we fix it. Same with a baseball player. You look at who he is, what he is. If it needs tweaked, you tweak him. If you don't, then, you know, and last thing, there was this one guy, he's a parent. I probably shouldn't tell this story, but I don't care. He couldn't coach his way out of a paper bag, but he's trying to tell one of my players during a game to change his pitching motion. Well, I mean, that's how this kid – there's tweaks, yes. and the kid was having an issue, but it had nothing to do with what the hell this guy was trying to fix. It's like I come in there with an ear problem, and you want to operate on my ankles.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. But anyway, that's why he'll never have the career.
Well, Claudia, you know what? I know you're a teacher, you know, and you're, of course, a coach. That's what a coach does, too, is teaches.
Right.
Do you teach different pitches? You know, is there an art to throwing a curveball, a split-finger fastball, a changeup? Do you teach different pitches to these young athletes?
Yes, great question. Split-finger, no, I'm 5'6", 5'6" and a half on a good hair day. My fingers
yes.
are not long, okay? So I could not throw your conventional, the way you hold a curveball. I had to throw it like a four-seam fastball with a little bit of a towards the end of it, and then I'd snap it, and I had a hell of a curveball. Now, I have tried to show some players that pitch. Only maybe three it worked for, but, you know, the convention. So, and then the other thing, too, is everybody's fingers are different. Some are shaped differently
sure.
as far as a little bit of a – like my sure. index finger points to the right. My mom used to tease me about it. Some are very straight. Tommy Lasorda's fingers were very crooked. And that does play a role in it. But also
sure.
finger pressure and where you place your finger on the seams. Greg Maddux made a Hall of Fame career out of it, and it'll cause movement. But what you want to do, Ray Miller, the old Pirates pitching coach, he used to say, whenever you're throwing or when you're jogging, hold a baseball. When you're running, throw a baseball. When you're throwing, pay attention to how you're throwing it, because if you throw it and somebody says, man, that had some movement on it, you can repeat it. Okay, so I do a
Got
lot
it.
Of pitching lessons as well. And this one young man, I talked to his mother today, as a matter of fact, very good pitcher. He had a hell of a lot of movement on his pitches. Did I teach him that movement? Not really. I just showed him play with it. Do different finger pressures, different parts of the seams. And maybe, just maybe, something might work. Okay? And then certain
sure.
pitches have gone away. You haven't heard much about the split finger anymore. The palm ball, Dave Justy used to, it was a changeup. Now they have you doing, it's called kind of the okay change, where you make the okay signal and you hold the ball. And you, well, how about for somebody who doesn't have big hands? Like, then what do you
Got
do?
It.
You know, so there's all kinds of pitches to be shown. But even from a fastball, like this one kid could not get a breaking pitch, and he was a reliever. So what we had him do, we had him throw a variety of different fastballs, a two-seam, which moves and sinks, a four-seam, which does not rise, stays in the air longer. Then you move the seams over different finger pressures, and it can have a late break, but it's still a fastball with movement, and you hope the hitter doesn't catch it flat. So there's different – you know, there's
wow.
different kinds of fastballs that you can have.
What technology, you know, and how you teach and how the mechanics, I think there's importance in mechanics, even though the mechanics may vary from different athletes. Would you agree with that?
Oh, for sure mechanics are important. Again, I mentioned Candelaria and Hunter Pence. They did what they did, and it worked. But you don't teach that kind of so much. But, you know, you like, again, for hitting, the mechanics, and you'll see there's a Pirate pitcher, and Mark knows who he is. He's a Pirate fan. Keller for the Pirates. He had 210 strikeouts last year, all-time Pirate record. I mentioned John Candelaria. Keller will never be the pitcher that John Candelaria was, in my opinion. John Candelaria's highest strikeout total was like 133. Does that mean that Keller's more of a strikeout pitcher? No. It means that the hitters of John Candelaria's day made a hell of a lot more contact than the hitters do today. The hitters today, and it's not an opinion, it's a fact. People say, oh, Claudio, no, Claudio, hell, it's the truth. There's more strikeouts than there are hits. Is it because the pitchers are so wonderful? Well, they have four or five different pitchers a game. They're throwing 190 miles an hour. Every hitter wants the pitcher to throw hard. There's an old saying, there's different pitchers who threw hard. There's an old saying that the team would send a limo to the airport to pick him up because they wanted him to get to the ballpark safely because all they did was throw heat. The pitchers that
okay.
you and I grew up with, and even Mark, those guys knew how to pitch. They changed eye levels, speeds, and locations, okay? the pitchers say, they gas it out. They throw as hard as they can, and the hitters, they're taught to uppercut, you know, lift, exit velo, all that garbage, hit lower half the ball, let it travel deep, hit the inside of the ball, which is all ridiculous. These hitters could be a hell of a lot better, but they're being taught what they're being taught, and this is what you have. More strikeouts, pop-ups, walks, you know, and another thing, and I won't get into that so much, but again, the technique is the reason why, the lack of proper technique is the reason why the numbers are as bad as they are. Then you say, well, Claudia, these guys are major league coaches. Who the hell
right.
are you? Well, Dr. Ross, well, you're not supposed to say who the hell are you, Dr. Roscoe. You're supposed to love me. But look, you're a doctor. You know, you're a wonderful doctor. But there's what do you call a guy who finished last in med school? You call him a doctor,
sure.
right? There's guys right. in major leagues that it's shocking. Not just major leagues, but there's attorneys, mechanics, you know, financiers. Not everybody is great at what they do. But then you say, well, Claudio, everybody is saying it. Well, your name is Dr. Greg Roscoe. If 50 million people say your name is Jim Marshall, it still ain't Jim Marshall. The Italians have a saying. If 50,000 people say a stupid thing, it's still a stupid thing. That's why I was at a Pirate-Yankee game a few years ago, and you looked at the batting averages, 217, 213, 221, 250. When Dale Barrett was hitting 268, they wanted to kill him here in Pittsburgh. Now, if you're hitting 230, you're going to get a long-term deal. It's amazing
wow.
the bar is set so low, and it all is based wow. when you have athletes like that, something's not right. It's the mechanics.
Claudio, you know what? The hour is gone. I had a quick email here, Claudio. A listener is saying, what's a knuckleball? Can you give us a 30-second synopsis of a knuckleball?
Well, it's not thrown so much with the knuckle. It's just knuckles. It comes in. You hold it. Some guys, Wilbur Wood, Tim Wakefield, who unfortunately passed, Phil Niekro, the Niekro brothers, they held it. Boy, it's hard to explain with your fingers, but you're not using the seams to roll off the fingertips. You're almost like short arming it, and the ball has zero spin, and it just moves like crazy. It's hard for the catchers to catch. That's why they always have bigger gloves. So you don't actually throw it with a knuckle, okay? You think I have a baseball here somewhere in my house. Yes, I do.
No,
I got a thousand of them. Yeah, but you don't throw it with an actual knuckle. The ball knuckles, but you throw it like with your fingertip, your fingernails, and you
wow.
you almost like push it, and you push it, and it just has no seam whatsoever,
Got
and
it.
It does funky things.
Well, it sounds like that's a topic for another show. You know that, Claudio,
yes,
talking about all these great baseball stories. Mr. Mancini, do you have another question or so before we close?
Well, as we wrap it up, let me just bring in Kenneth from Peoria saying, guys, I can't get enough of your show. As usual, the other guys inclined to it, too, to keep this thing going. And he's enjoying the injuries and talking about breaking down the players and stuff like that. He just throws in, you know, can't get enough of it. When we're down to about 1:09, and I know we're up against it because the hour goes by quick. Claudio, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you as we wrap this up, and I'll give it over to the doc, and we'll talk about next week.
Well, I have a show called the Claudio Rossano Show, brought to you by Roscoe Hearing and Allergy Care Center. You can check that out at www.claudiorossano.com. And from there, you can see our show, The Boxing Authorities, and Real Baseball Talk and Italian Impact Weekly with Steve Mancini, ItalianImpactWeekly.com. I have great Luther Dupree, Smoking Jim Frazier with The Boxing Authorities. I have great partners on all these shows, and they make it fun. And we've gotten great – John Parato with The Real Boxing Talk, a national baseball writer, in my opinion, the best one. So, you know, I enjoy doing these shows, and people love them, thank God. And Dr. Roscoe, I think the world of him. I respect the hell out of him as a professional and as a person, and I'm so glad I can call him a friend, and I enjoy being on these shows.
Okay,
well,
hey, Doc, how can people get a hold of you?
Very simply, GJRMD, 308.com. Our guest next week is to be determined. Mark, I'll get that to you soon.
Okay.
You know, it's a busy it's a busy time of year, and our scheduling department is doing their best, and we've had a couple of cancellations or so, but I'll get back to you within
that
a week
happens.
And we'll get it posted, okay?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I can't wait. Happy Good Friday tomorrow, Easter on Sunday. I mean, all the good things. We will be back next week, same time, same channel. Guess to be determined till then. For the guys out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Claudio and Doc, to Greg, Roscoe, yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. We'll see you next week, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Boy, thank you, listeners. Thank you, Claudio.